Production. Recorded live.
Good morning and hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of 42 Minutes. Today is Tuesday, 10/16/2012. I believe this is our 53rd episode, and today we're joined by Dr. Gibbs Williams, a practicing psychoanalyst of some 40 years and a synchronicity scholar of some 50 years. He is the author of the book Demystifying Meaningful Coincidences, in which he outlines his original non-mystical, non-magical, non-Jungian, totally naturalistic theory of synchronicity. More information about our guest can be found at www.gibbsonline.com. We're really excited to talk to him today because, naturally, the authors of the Sync book are curious about all the facets of synchronicity. And so, welcome to the show, Dr. Gibbs Williams, and how are you doing today?
My pleasure. I appreciate the invitation. I find this very exciting.
Great. Do you have any synchronicities you could start the show off with? Anything going on that you're seeing? One of the things that we notice are sometimes things just kind of stand out, little patterns.
Well, I've got a question for Dr. Williams, actually, because I have read a little bit of your work, and I'm a little bit curious. Do you view synchronicity as a symptom? Sometimes I get that impression.
No, it's a very real event.
But it's all, okay, so the main argument then is on the meaning, because synchronicities are basically, I mean, how do you explain this? This, I know it's like difficult territory, but
well, after 50
who
years,
lives with synchronicity, I think.
After 50 years, it's not so difficult anymore relative to what I think I am seeing. First of all, I tuned into you guys last night, and I heard your last, one of your programs, where you were summarizing your year, which I found quite interesting, and I came up with a concept called synchronicity consciousness. And it is true that once you start being aware of synchronicities, if you take them seriously, you can see more and more and more of them, and they typically take the form of themes that get repeated. So, for example, I know a man who runs a website called Space, S-P-A-C-E, with a period after each one, is a reporter and a really fine man who's been interested in synchronicities for a long time, and he had a run of rabbits that he saw all over the place, and they were connected with important events in his life. And many people have that kind of thing. So with you guys, for example, you have that the moon thing and various themes that you interweave and big on symbolism and so forth. And it's not unusual these days for people to plug into that kind of thing. My particular contribution is once I'm beyond the awe thing, it's awesome to plug into these repetitive patterns, which, of course, is great. However, I've also discovered that there can be too much of it, from my vantage point, too much of it all about awe. And no disrespect mentioned, but I often find people are sort of like numinosity junkies. They get off on the, oh, I see another one. Oh, there's another. That's good. I like that. That's fun. However, from my perspective, and I'm an old man now, I'm 75, and I've been studying this for 50 years, I find I get kicks out of trying to understand what's this really all about. What are the implications? What are the explanations? And essentially, the big argument or the big question is, are these divine revelations, or as sometimes being called, God's little miracles, or are these self-generated? Obviously, I take the position that they're self-generated and have nothing to do with mystical, magical. So that's a start to my question. I also did, by the way, come up with a synchronicity that I just saw online that I thought was interesting relative to its components and what the person did with it, and conveys the major interest that I have. If you would like, I'll lead the synchronicity to you, maybe go on from there.
Yes, please.
This is on a website. I'm not really sure which one. It doesn't really matter. It's titled Interesting Synchronicity? I was playing around with an iPhone app, which I think can be pretty fun. I Ching HD, I guess in high definition. Well, you guessed it, it's the I Ching as an app. Pretty nice if you like that stuff. I was first asking the I Ching if I would achieve consciousness. OBE exists, and the answer was pretty much, if you work hard and change some stuff in your habits, you will. It was the same answer I got from my own dream interpretation, so it was no surprise, actually. And the second question was, when would it happen, which I thought was kind of a silly question. I got the same kind of answer that if I just opened up to new ways and possibilities and worked hard on it, then I would achieve it. And also I got the impression from the answer that there was some kind of duality in my question, and some thoughts in my head came up that I'm already doing it, so my question was a bit of, period. Now what? I was surprised about what was at the bottom of my answer was a little side note that said, early mornings bring success. I must say that that one made me surprised. I have had such a hard time doing my meditations and practices in the morning because I'm so tired and haven't got the right attitude to do it. I know it, and I want to change it. And here's the important part. So that little note came to me like a thunderbolt from a clear sky. Now, to me, this is important because up to that point, he had two things which you could call synchronistic, but to him, it was no big deal. What became a big deal was the part at the end where he says that he doesn't have the right attitude, and he experienced it as a thunderbolt from a clear sky. The difference between a coincidence and a meaningful coincidence, which is a synchronicity, is the particular meaning that the person brings to it. It's special meaning.
Right.
And it's the specialness which makes a synchronicity seem awesome.
Right. It's that feeling you get like, oh, and you mentioned also that it has a tendency to change people's lives. Like it changed young lives.
I have no doubt that relative to the synchronicities that I have had, by the way, I must say I had my first one when I was 20 or maybe 19, and I kept a 37-year diary, not diary, journal, and in that I recorded what for me were 19, what I would call really significant synchronicities and became the basis for my book. In addition to, I'm a psychoanalyst and I have a number of synchronicity-prone patients, so I wrote their material out and then tried to understand the context and then validated my original theory through that material. And I found that one of my, I think, major contributions is that these things don't just simply happen out of the blue. It's no coincidence that coincidences occur when they occur. They occur in a very known time, and to me they are associated with major stuck points, and it's the attitude to the stuck point. If you don't collapse and give in, but determine to struggle with struggle, I believe it turns on one's idiosyncratic creative process, and you go about on a kind of a psychological scavenger hunt where you're looking for clues, and when you get enough of those clues that form a recognizable pattern, that pattern is a synchronicity, but because it's in coded form, has to be interpreted like a waking dream.
Right. It shares the same symbolism as dreams, I've noticed. I've become kind of a synchronicity junkie where you're like going around, like you say, on a scavenger hunt. You're like a little detective. And you're like, okay, well, I've seen it here and see it here and see it here. And then sometimes, just like a dream, it will almost come down to a pun where it's like, and it just turns a little key in your head and you're like, oh, I get it now. Like a dream, you know how I think Jung who described a dream where the person was on his back or whatever, or pun like a long walk off a short pier, but you'll have these synchronicities that will like add up to that, and then it'll be like, ah, I get it. But I mean, there's like a growing amount of people who are basically like searching these and living almost as if they're like a divine intervention in their life or a deus ex machinist. But you would call yourself an anti-Jung? You don't believe in the magical aspect of this?
No. I started out as a de facto Jungian, and my first or second major synchronicity I call Lazarus Rising, and it happened to be at a time where I was extraordinarily confused, as many 19-year-olds are and continue to be, and I was asking ultimate questions. I was trying to find absolute answers to ultimate questions, such as, who am I? Is there a meaning? What is it? How do I know? How do I know I know? And that kind of stuff. So it's probably no error that I became a major in philosophy and still use it today. It was in this context that I got interested in the esoteric occult and made a study of the Kabbalah and tarot and astrology and so forth on a really in-depth level, and was introduced to spiritualism. And it was at that point where I had this really incredible synchronicity, which started my, I guess, active researching in the implications of what is this really all about. My first reaction was that I was in touch with some kind of transcendent realm of spirituality, and I was literally getting guided by, I don't know, master of whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But since I've changed my mind radically.
If it's really personal, then we won't go into it.
You could be as personal as you want.
Well, I'm just interested in what you said about the esoteric, because, of course, the same symbolism as in dreams and the same symbolism that I find in synchronicity are the same dreams that are in mythologies and stuff. So, I mean, of course this is nothing new. And most of it through history has been associated with, you know, the witch doctor or so forth and so on in the tribe. So,
well, let me make a comment. You sound like you have read a lot about Jung and are very interested in the collective unconscious and his symbolism and archetypes and so forth. I'm not anti that, but my perspective is that everybody looks at synchronicities from, of course, their own perspective. How could you not?
Right.
Some of us are more Jungianly predisposed. Some of us are more Freudianly predisposed. I like the British school, the self-therapist, like Winnicott and Guntrip and so forth, that see things from a self-psychology perspective, and it's fine. You know, different theories are generated from people who are looking for answers to these big ultimate questions, and out of that will be derived various alternative theories of synchronicities.
So are you an archivist of all of the different theories as well then?
Well, in terms of coming up with my own original theory, I had become steeped in Jung's point of view. And essentially where I diverged, well, first of all, I discovered that there's politics in spirit land, so that the idea of an absolutely pure something or other on this earth plane is absolutely absurd. And it was a bit too feelingful for me. And I also discovered that people who are steeped in this kind of, I don't know, peace and light and divine intervention and so forth. I like Montaigne's statement of super-celestial thoughts breed subterranean conduct. And I just found an enormous amount of hypocrisy and nonsense, and that everybody ultimately is involved in a massive ambivalence conflict, and the key to success in good living is to be aware of the splits in oneself and try to reconcile them best you can on this earth plane, not transcending it. I don't think there's anything out there that is giving me special wisdom. Whatever I get is the repository of good thinking and good acting on this earth plane, which is always available if you can Google it and divine great wisdom. The important part about it is that I switched from the Jungian thing, the mystical, magical thing, when I realized that I was suffering from a paucity of critical thinking and that I could not become whole because I couldn't get out of a protracted ambivalence conflict, which drove me into my 11-year psychoanalysis 3 times a week on the couch, no insurance. And it was through that where I was able to plug in critical thinking and discovered that I had a major problem with myself. I was dissociated, and I couldn't achieve any kind of unity and integration. And my analysis was essentially an attempt to build a self-structure, and that it was through this prism of self-pathology that I evolved this my particular theory of synchronicities.
This is pretty fascinating to me, because on the one hand, you're saying that an individual's own psychological structure is manifesting the symbols that that individual needs to find their own sense of wholeness.
Yeah, good, nice statement.
And
yeah,
so,
and people are more or less predisposed to various symbols. People of the Jungian persuasion are going to see archetypes all over the place. So do I. But from my vantage point, the idea of the great mother or the wise father or so forth, that's nice, but so what? What do you do with all that? I mean, you could collect these symbols, and then the interesting thing from my vantage point is how does it apply to your practical life? What do you do with it? How are they best used?
What for?
But we are four. You know, so you're a collector of numinous archetypes. That's nice. I collect marbles and build ships, and that's pretty and so forth, but it has little utility other than it looks pretty. It's sort of nice. It's interesting. So what?
Well, another facet of what we – one of the things that I like to think of this similar to is like a psychic weather. And so there's an individual – who has their own internal mood, whatever, but then the larger collective, you can witness patterns moving through the whole, you know, mass of humanity oftentimes too. And so sometimes it seems like there's emotional weather that we can observe and also kind of read synchronicities, like, so signs and pointers to that. So
yeah, I agree. In place of the collective conscious, unconscious, I like the collective consciousness, which is the repository of all the great ideas that have been historically amassed. And the way I see it is, isn't it interesting that really great inventions or great realizations often occur almost simultaneously? So that in the history of science, for example, there are many, I think evolution was in the air. Evolution, the theory of evolution was already in the air. And I
general
think
semantics,
only a matter of,
the discovery of helium. There's
it's just a matter of days that, you know, if it wasn't discovered by this particular person, it'd be discovered by that person. That there's no question that there is an ongoing evolution of consciousness and that people that are plugged into a particular layer of consciousness are going to be attuned to each other. So it's no accident that things spring up, you know, simultaneously.
So there is a process then. I mean, all of this is just, or they are just tools for our evolution, perhaps?
I think they're tools for understanding what our evolutionary process is. I think the big thing in evolution is the evolution of consciousness. And,
right.
And from my vantage point, consciousness is not just a pure thing. There are layers of consciousness. There's a continuum of consciousness certainly applied to the way people experience their own psychodynamics.
Okay, so then, as you said, you were 75 years old. As someone who is towards the latter half of your existence here on Earth, and then...
That exactly is hard to swallow, but you're right. I intend not to die. However, I'm inclined to think that I may. I may be wrong with this.
You start your journey in your, you know, early or late teens, early 20s, thinking about the big questions, you know, wondering about the mystery.
Right.
And, you know, it seems like this is one of the questions that propels us is, you know, can we know the mystery? Is there, you know, so we're moving towards, we're seekers towards knowledge or something, you know, just experience regarding the mystery. Is this a worthy pursuit? Can you know anything, or is it just what would be your advice towards younger people thinking about the big things?
Well, at 19, I read a seminal book when paperbacks first came out, which I urge everybody to run out to your bookstore and get instantly. It was just mind-blowing. It's called The Story of Philosophy by Will Durant. And in The Story of Philosophy, there were like, I don't know, 20 or so basic philosophers like Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Spinoza, and so forth. And when I read it, it was amazing to me. It was as if I was listening and discussing ideas that had been in my mind for years. And for once, people weren't saying, you think too much, and why are you worrying about this stuff, and get over it, and go dancing, and stop being a nerd. And it was like, what are you talking about? That's me. Leave me alone. And it was like I had friends from 2,000 years ago that were more important to me than my family. And I guess that got me lit on studying speculative philosophy, in which I just discovered that it's so marvelous because it gets outside of all experience and questions everything. It's like knowledge about everything. And it's ontology, the nature of reality, epistemology. How do you have access to knowledge about reality? How do you know that you know? What is knowledge? And all those questions, to me, are the most basic questions of all. And relative to synchronicities and synchronicity-prone people, I think what's happening is that this quest for trying to understand the mystery of what is it all about, and is there meaning, an absolute meaning, or is extraordinarily important. And with our materialistic society, and I'm not anti-materialism, but I am interested in not dumbing down, that more and more people are getting hooked on trying to answer these questions, of which I think a synchronistic consciousness is at the forefront of this quest. And I advocate it. I think it's an enormously exciting phenomenon. And maybe, if I'm right, the world can be, if you get on this path, it may be the answer to what people have been hungering for since the beginning of time. It's terribly important to me.
On a personal level, though, that wouldn't even be able, I mean, a mass group of people would not be open or able to search down these ideas without the internet.
Well, that's right. And isn't that an amazing thing, that we can be at any one moment in time connected simultaneously on this kind of call all over the world? Isn't that terrific? So that the dissemination of knowledge and methods to gain knowledge has got incredible implications.
Just a Google away from Aristotle.
Oh, yes, right. That's right. Good point.
But then
I also know, by the way, I also am aware and appreciate you guys I guess you like the trickster element in the idea of synchronicities and the fun thing. You guys kid around. I appreciate that. One of the beauties of studying synchronicities is to each his own. You know, I think it's inexhaustible with respect to how do you view these things, what do you do with them, and it's a wonderful exercise for mind expansion.
Was the idea of the numinous junkie, where someone's just cataloging and collecting synchronicities, but then not actually looking into the deeper meaning of them?
Well, it's deceptive. You know, it's nice. It's a kind of spiritual heroin. You know, it's nice to get high. And, of course, if you just stop with what is this all about, it is extraordinarily seductive to believe that you're literally being guided by master teachers and fairies and whatever the hell else you want to be intervened with. That's nice, but it seems to me to be a lazy man's go further. You know, take a look at my theory. You may not like my theory, but at least it's a good alternative theory, and suggests that these are self-directed messages from one's own personal, not the collective unconscious, and that it would be well of each one of us to make a connection with our personal unconscious, and if you believe it, it will guide you, you know, like a green light towards what it is that you want in terms of goal satisfaction. And my way drops out the mystery or the excitement of awe. It's true. You lose something. On the other hand, you gain, I think, an enormous appreciation for one's own creative process. At the beginning of my book, I came up with the following idea that I think demonstrates my particular alternative approach to Jung. I call it a one-trick magic show. I want you to imagine that you've been invited to an extraordinarily interesting one-trick magic show where the magician is going to do this incredible trick, and that's the whole performance. Now, what makes it important is not the trick. He says at the end of it, when everybody's going to be in awe, they're going to be astounded. There's no question. All right, now everybody's astounded and the trick has been done. He then says, all right, now the main point of the show is as follows. I am going to make you all an offer. And the offer is that you can continue to come back to my show and see how I do this trick over and over and over again and be awed every time you come in. or I will show you how the trick is done. And it's a trick. Now, each one of us is going to have to determine, you want to know what the trick is, or you want to continue to be in awe? I like the idea of knowing what the trick is. Once you know what the trick is, obviously the magic element disappears because you know how it's done. But in place of it, I think there's a secondary gain of being able to get in touch with one's personal unconscious and the key to meaning, personal meaning, on this earth plane.
There are theories in our community of actually viewing synchronicities in other people's lives that they're not aware of. Or do you think it's possible for us to send us these messages and either misinterpret them or completely misunderstand them?
It takes a person to have a synchronicity. It takes a person to, let's put it this way, one person's synchronicity is another person's ho-hum. If you see somebody who seemingly has a synchronicity, you can certainly ask, you seem to be experiencing a very meaningful experience, and you seem lit up by it, you want to talk about it? Yes. So let's say it's confirmed. Yes, you're right. You did see them experience the synchronicity, which I often experience with patients who I work with. To me, the more interesting issue is, once you've established that there's a synchronicity, what is the individual meaning of that synchronicity to the person I'm with? With the understanding, now let's talk about Jung. You probably are familiar with the scarab coincidence, which is the major one that he had in terms of his patients, in which he believed that the getting the butterfly, whatever it was, the moth, and giving it to the patient with the synchronicity being her dream of being handed this object in her dream was synchronous. And he said that observing her, that she had this numinous, extraordinarily energetic experience, and it broke through what he called her animus. And I guess this uptight lady was able to feel something, and he attributes a cure to her. Now, what's interesting is, in my research, and I think this is an original discovery, that Jung, who wrote down virtually everything and dated everything, did not date this most critical experience. And there's very little follow-up. And I believe he fudged it. He didn't want to date it. He didn't want it recorded in detail because he added too much of himself into it. For one thing, he did not ask the patient, what is the meaning of this? His meaning was, it was an Egyptian symbol of rebirth. His patient wasn't going to know it was a symbol of Egyptian rebirth. This is all Jung. Jung projected Jung into it. Now, it's Jung's synchronicity. That's the scarab. Now, what was important for Jung? I believe it validated for Jung his evolving theory of synchronicity, which involved a connection with the archetypes from the collective unconscious. It was Jung's evolution. It had little to do with his patient. And he also left out of the picture transference, which is very important, that the man giving the, the scarab thing to the patient, the gift, was, I believe, her positive transference to Jung as the good father, which he completely overlooks.
This is funny in light of a book that I just read. It was called The Storytelling Animal, and in that, the guy says that part of our evolutionary biological equipment is the storytelling equipment to kind of keep the individual the hero of the story, and so we take various elements in our life to maintain like good mental health by keeping us the hero of our own stories.
A key concept these days is narrative, which I certainly subscribe to. I think whoever wrote what you're saying is accurate. There's another book which I think typifies this, that's really very Jungian, The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Campbell, which is really very good, in which he says that the 20th century hero is the person who delves into his psyche and discovers splits, and then he is the hero is the one who is dedicated to healing the splits. Both Jung and Freud subscribe to that in their own particular ways, which I think is accurate. In terms of storytelling, I like the idea of dream interpretation as creating plays or stories at night for the purpose of maintaining sleep, in which the dreamer, as like a movie maker, is everything. He's the actors, he's the writer, he's the plot manufacturer, he's the set designer, and so forth. And if you look at it as a series of choices, you can really generate great meaning from both dreams as well as synchronicities, which I think are like waking dreams.
So you've done a nice job of explaining how some of the mystery doesn't necessarily have to be there. As far as like the larger question of why is there a world, or why, you know, the why question, does that just become irrelevant at some point? You know, so
No, I think the mystery exists. I think all these are all stabs at trying to understand what is this really all about. I think the key to this, though, is the meaning of meaning. And from a Jungian perspective and the mystical magical perspective, meaning is clearly, and Jung is quoted all through his work, that he believes that there is a realm of absolute meaning that is part of the collective unconscious, and that in synchronicities you plug into that those meanings, and the meanings take the form of archetypes, which presumably, if you interpret them, are going to lead to personal knowledge for changing attitudes and so forth. That's a very nice idea, but I think it's a fantasy. But in my experience, direct experience, and philosophical experience, a human being always adds something of their own self in taking any raw data and making meaning out of it. So that the idea of some absolute meaning is absurd, because to have an idea of absolute meaning means that you have to project your own final authority into the fantasy or the idea of some absolute meaning that you can connect with. And I think it's patently ridiculous. And I think the key to synchronicities is answering the very biggest question of life, which is, who is your own final authority? You're going to give it up to ghosts and goblins and magical thinking and so forth? Fine, go right ahead. I prefer to make myself responsible. The buck stops here. I generate my own meanings. And I feel that's the most responsible way to be on this earth plane.
Don't you have a new a recent book out about pivoting with the meaning or pivoting with the emotion? I can't remember the title.
Yeah, I wrote a new book. I'm glad you mentioned it. It's called Attitude Shifting.
Attitude Shifting.
Yeah, it's a really important thing. It has to do with anybody who's interested in helping people manage with anxiety, frustration, stress, and depression. And it's really a good guide. And if I could find a way to market this thing, this would be the answer to veterans suffering from PTSD and heroin addicts who are trying to recover from drug addiction and so forth. It's a powerful book. In which
it's reprogramming yourself, kind of? Is that what it is?
It's self-help. It's enlightened self-help, in which the key to success is the problems are not anxiety. It's the attitude to anxiety, of which people who are anxious tend to be anxious about being anxious, similarly with frustration and depression. And there's some relatively simple exercises which help people learn how to tolerate these lousy feelings.
Uh-huh. Now, is there a link our listeners can find this Attitude Shifting at?
Yeah, attitudeshifting.com. Glad you mentioned it. I appreciate it.
Well, that's easy enough.
Everybody in the world should download this, and it's really expensive. And if you have a Kindle, if you can afford $3, you will have enlightenment. And if you don't agree, send the books back to me. I will refund every cent.
And then this leads to another question to me, because in my own mind, one of the most successful religions, quote unquote, of the 20th century has been Alcoholics Anonymous, and successful in that
It actually helps people find a sense of peace, you know, in trauma. But within that world of Alcoholics Anonymous, what they actually have to do as an individual is cede their central authority to something, you know, the higher power idea, so that they're not the sole agent responsible for their actions, because they keep, you know, they're unable to have a strong enough will to overcome this addiction greater than them, and so they cede their authority to a higher power.
Which is where me and 12 steps part. If you will go on my website, GibbsOnline.com, go to the theory section, you will see, and scroll down, you will see a paper I wrote on the higher power and psychodynamics, in which I had 5 dropouts from AA who couldn't stand the higher power idea, but were, I believe, spiritually obsessed. In trying to understand what their problems were, I came upon a discovery that they were all dealing with year one phenomena having to do with a lack of faith, hope, trust, love, and persistence. Able to identify those issues and work with them, concentrating on having them plug in those experiences, within 1 year, people who had been addicted for 10 years were starting to build a solid self, and within 2 years, they became solid citizens. I believe, unmodestly, that this may be the beginning of a grounded spirituality, free of all transcendent, from my vantage point, nonsense.
Huh. Well, that's fascinating stuff, and it will rub a lot of our listeners the wrong way.
I hope so. No, I really don't. I'm not trying to be belligerent for belligerent's sake. I really believe that my odyssey, which, as I said, started out steeped in all of this stuff, went through, an evolutionary process in which I think I really have discovered from my own experience something which is uniquely different and fresh. And I only urge people, have an open mind, come to it with prejudice and bias, and wonder who is this guy who's, promoting himself as the equivalent of Jung. Why not? I have a right to. Everybody has a right to. And I have 75 years of experience to back it up. If you want to challenge me by the facts. But keep an open mind and try it out.
What I like is that, you know, and you even use the magic trick analogy that, you know, what people perceive as magic can be known. And this is what you're saying, that these things that Jung said were completely unknowable from a rational sense can be known. Is that what you're saying?
My book is to take his 3 anti-causal arguments, one of method, one of meaning, and one of time. And he said that they are essentially irrefutable. I refute each one, and in so doing, generate a number of questions, and the book essentially was the answers to each of these questions, like the meaning, the relationship between meaning and causality. He says you can't explain this using linear causality. I say, and he junks causality and adds this ridiculous term called acausality, which is really a way of, it's a causality, but he says it's no causality. What I did was to say, all right, you can't use linear causality. You can change the operational definition of causality. And there's still a way to do that and keep it under the province of science. Got to read my book to find out how to do that.
It seems like you're saying that Jung basically fell into the same trap that Freud did. Freud started analyzing everything through sex because he was obsessed with sex.
Well, that's true in a way that you can, look, we're all trapped by our own, you know, prisms. We're all trapped by what we know and what we don't know. And it's hard to be objective and have an open mind. But these guys are seminal because they each, from their own experience, try to heal themselves in their own way. And they were largely successful. But, and I think the beautiful part about synchronicities is that there's always going to be new people who get bogged down in their own stuff and have to try to invent a new methodology or a new way, in effect, of curing themselves. And that's how progress in psychology and science goes. I don't think there's going to be a definitive theory of synchronicity, and that's why I find it so fascinating, because there's more questions than answers.
I've even read that Darwin got bogged down in his own sense of sexuality and brought that to his theory of evolution, which a lot of people take as truth. But
you know, sooner or later, you get bogged down in your own crap. There's no way to avoid it, and then you either know it or you don't, and you try to deal with it if you can, and some people are more or less successful, and that's life.
Well, sir, we're coming to the end of our 42 minutes.
I love this.
We have about a minute and a half left. There's other things we got to do, but we would love to have you back if you're interested.
Oh, I'd love to. I tell you the truth, this is the first time I was able to go to sleep and not worry about this, and I just went over some notes, and I feel extremely pleased that I was able to feel as comfortable as I do. And you guys are great, and I'm glad you had the program and you invited me. I'd love to be returned.
Oh, we shall talk again.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. If you're looking for information, more information about our guest, go to GibbsOnline.com. And the other site you mentioned was AttitudeShifting.com.
So let me also give my email address, which is gwilliamsny11@aol.com. Anybody who would like to whatever, I will write back. This has been a pleasure. I really appreciate you guys. Thanks.
And thank you for your time, sir. Thank you. And next week we have Kevin Halcott and the band It's Not Night, It's Space. And so thanks, everyone. Where is my window? So I can cut this off. Have a great day, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.